This is Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. Earlier this month, the Big East Conference and the Electronic Gaming Federation announced a three-year agreement that will enable all 11 member schools to compete in a year-long multi-game season for the first time as official EGF Collegiate League members.
EGF declares, it's time to recognize that esports has arrived. Time to recognize esports as a passion, as an industry, and as a career.
That's what we like to see, as the goal's left open. We do see
Kyle drives for a triple kill.
Esports are a path for students to represent, to engage, to bond, and to grow. To compete, to win on a national stage.
The EGF Collegiate season began earlier this month and will conclude with the national championship in April of 2021. Who better to talk about EGF and esports than the CEO of the Electronic Gaming Federation? Eric Johnson is our guest on Sports Jam. Eric joins us via Zoom from his home in California. Eric, great to see you.
Great to see you as well. Thanks for having me on. And thanks for talking about this subject. It's very important.
It certainly is. And you can't get anything that's growing more than esports. And during COVID, you've actually been able to take advantage of that. Esports has created new opportunities for you, hasn't it?
That's correct. Certainly, the COVID environment impacted all of us, and I have a lot of background in sport and feel very bad for what it's done to a lot of the college athletics for the fall season in particular. But esport is able to be, through technology, played from the home as easily as from the campus or from the school or from certain LAN centers and in person. So we took advantage of that and ended up working with a number of schools who were looking for some way to create normalcy for their students who were going through a tough spring. And certainly for the fall, we've been able to start the new school year with everything. Most schools are still shut down. Some are open, but for the most part, all of our teams are playing from their home.
We're going to talk about your background here on Sports Jam, which is quite extensive, including an 18-plus year stint at ESPN. And you also run a number of different things. You're also connected with UCLA, your alma mater. And so we'll talk about all that. But how did someone with such a traditional sports background get to be so good at esports?
Well, I never say that I could have played esports because I'm too old to have played esports, but I have gamed from every console since the old Commodore 64 through Atari to all the way up to PS4, and I still play today. So I've always understood and had a passion for video games, and I understood what that did for how I connected it to education and ultimately to my career. I always saw the inherent problem-solving cognitive development that can come from playing video games. So this notion that it's rotting your brain was something that I never believed in. So for me, I also have a son who played baseball, and I have a daughter who's very much an avid gamer and actually went to school for this. And I walked into my living room one time and I saw my son playing MLB The Show and watching a Red Sox game. And I saw my daughter on her computer watching a League of Legends, and they were both talking to their friends and watching the action that was happening on the screen. And I said, why do we make this so complicated? This is skill-based, people at the highest level with spectators and fandom and massive viewership and interaction. It's the same thing. And that was my aha moment. And from there forth, I thought this is something that I could pursue and want to get in business with.
Talk about multitasking, huh? You watch your kids do that. They would have no problem with having a producer in their ear telling them one thing and then somebody else saying, do this, do that. They can multitask with the best of them. Your daughter, Ashley, where's she going to school right now?
So she just, she was going to Southern New Hampshire on the East Coast. She just moved to the West Coast and is looking up and down and potentially going to UC Santa Cruz, going back in.
Did that fire come from you, the whole gaming thing, or did she do it on her own?
No, I think she did it on her own. And I think for her, it was definitely Minecraft was probably where she first got her. And Minecraft is an incredible, expansive, creative world where it's very educational too, that she really got into it. And I took her to a number of Minecons around the world, which are interesting places. And it was something that became her path and her passion. So she not only spent time doing that, she ended up on her high school. She ended up being the IT person, even though she was only a high school junior, and got a scholarship to RIT for the work she did there. She ran their whole Apple MacBook program, which I thought was amazing. And going through that process of looking for schools for her to go to, if you go back 7 years ago, 8 or 6 years ago, there was a lot of colleges that did not have game development programs yet. And we saw how not only through that process, but then when she was in school, how the gaming community was kind of a subset of the rest of the traditional campus space. Like there were clubs, but the clubs weren't as recognized, obviously not the same as athletics, for sure, but also there seemed to be some misses. And so from my standpoint, seeing what that was to seeing where we are today, it's part of the passion that fuels me with EGF to be going after creating a much more visible, organized way for colleges and the best colleges in this country and greatest rivalries to compete in esport the same way they compete in other traditional sports.
This could go in the demolition coming out. Primal on Zombie Burger opens things up, and that's the kind of play you want to see. And wow, I'm loving the offensive aggression here coming out from St. John's University. It's exactly what they need here to gain back that momentum.
And now you have the Big East on board with EGF and handling their esports activity. But you brought up a great point, the fact that how your daughter has been able to use the skills that she has learned from these games into a career-minded set and to have all kinds of other skills that maybe you and I were never exposed to. You know, my son-in-law, he is a gamer, and I hear him talk about certain things, and one of his best friends is in the military, and they play these military games, and they know a lot about intelligence and things like that. It's amazing what you can learn from esports and e-games that I don't think the average person my age really got at a certain point. I think it's a whole new mindset, isn't it, Eric, on how these games are important and how they can really, and the skills you can develop from them.
Yeah, it's not just hand-eye coordination anymore. It's hand-eye coordination with ability to process multiple different things at the same time and also use, you know, once again, problem-solving skills to be able to unlock maps and unlock areas and strategies that just are much more complex than games in the past. So that is a reason why every branch of the military actively markets in this space. Like this is a very important target to recruit from because, you know, the technologies used in the military today often require exactly those same skills. And I think, you know, for EGF, while there are professional esport players and that obviously business has boomed in many ways, the students who are coming through the colleges like and through the systems like at the Big East universities, if they were going to be professional, they probably already would have gone professional by the time they were age 14, 15, or 16. This is about career pathing them into a professional career in esport. And certainly this is an industry that's going to keep growing and keep hiring everything from game developers to designers to, you know, we talked about the idea of people who do on-air talent or shoutcasters of these matches. So there's a lot of different things that are going to continue to grow. So this is a way to use their passion base, connect it to, you know, the STEM programs and the academic side and give them a good career path.
You would know, I mean, you brought ESPN at all different kinds of levels as the executive vice president of global advertising revenue and sales operations. That's a nice title. People might not even understand it. But when you think about what you actually did, you led a 400-person team that was dedicated to growing a nearly $4 billion advertising business for all of ESPN's media platforms globally. That includes television, streaming, digital, mobile, app programs, automation, radio, audio, magazine, regional syndication, local sponsorship, activation, and events. That's all you did there?
I'm tired with just reading it. Back to me. I'm pretty exhausted.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it was. ESPN is an amazing company. I mean, the whole Walt Disney Company is an amazing company, but ESPN, with its own spirit, is. I am very blessed and fortunate to have done that for a couple decades of my life, and it is a great opportunity to be able to see everything that's happening across the sports landscape. because ESPN has a, you know, major, you know, stakehold in just about every sport out there on a global basis as well.
So it makes us understand just how growing and important esports and the Electronic Gaming Federation is for you to leave a place like that where you're basically on top of the world in your field. You wanted to branch out and do some new things, and everybody understands that. You're also involved as the founder and CEO of One Worldwide, a global sports media and entertainment revenue venture firm. If I spent the whole time reading his resume to you, you would the show would be over. So we'll give a little taste of each of that. But when it comes to EGF, when you met the founder, Tyler Schroat, how did that develop?
Yeah, so I met Tyler just under 2 years ago. And, you know, I, like you said, I working at ESPN in a wonderful career, and I knew I always wanted to have a second career investing in companies and growing companies or, you know, platforms that are things where I saw where I thought sports fan was going to go, for sports fandom and how people consume sport. I saw areas of opportunity. This was one of them. But getting into esport for me, on the professional side, did not make sense. When I met Tyler, what I realized is that Tyler had built this amazing infrastructure and great relationships with schools of how to coordinate and organize these tournaments. And at ESPN, one of our biggest platforms is college football. And college football, in many ways, ESPN is the league because they control the rights to the bowls. They control the rights to the trophy and the college football playoff. And they obviously have tons of games that dominate the schedule. And for that reason, I saw how commercially that's how we put everything together from the college football playoff to the beginning of the season. It's everything that I've been doing for, you know, 20 years. So to see the opportunity in esport to just model that, right? So esport can be confusing even to athletic directors. Is it really a sport? Is it not a sport? I don't get it because I don't game. There's so many things that are so similar that we're just changing the language and changing the way we're connecting to the campus. And ultimately, when you have big rivalries on college playing esport against one another, advertisers and sponsors recognize that, right?
The Big East Commissioner Val Ackerman was thrilled about this partnership with the Big East. So obviously she gets it now. Did you have a deep conversation with her about this?
Val was very, very kind. We ran one of our first events. We ran a number of invitationals last spring to get the system up and running. And we ran one in New York City. We ran a Big East Invitational. And Val was kind enough to come down and spend the day there with us and watch the action of all the schools competing. That was back when we could actually be in one room together. It was rather nice. Looking forward to those days again in the spring, hopefully.
You bet.
And so Val kind of saw it firsthand. And she was, like I said, very complimentary. These are schools that are I consider leaders in kind of the collegiate esports space. You know, there is a gamut. There's a third of the schools who are very sophisticated already, a third who are finding their way, and a third who still haven't figured out how this whole thing's going to work. So being partnered with the Big East helps us even more because they're going to be tremendous advocates for the whole system. And ultimately, that's what we want. We want the whole system to grow.
Let's talk about the type of games that these college athletes are playing. One of them is called Rocket League. And it's basically soccer put together, or if you want to call it football, but soccer put together with vehicle smash-up kind of thing. That it's a crazy game, but it's exciting. And when you hear the broadcast of these games, you understand how these kids are really, when I say kids, I mean that respectful, when the college students are, you know, are going through these games and learning and competing against each other. You can see how the adrenaline will flow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, Rocket League is a great one and probably one of the ones that I enjoy watching most because I grew up playing soccer. And the idea of having these a dome that's where everything's contained and a ball that moves back and forth with three cars on the map trying to knock the ball into the goal. It takes a little demolition derby and a little bit of soccer, puts them into something with some hyper-fueled rocket engines as part of it. And, you know, we ran our Rocket League on ESPN2 this past spring. It's a good sport for, you know, to be on television because even if you don't play the sport, within a few minutes, you get the concept of everything that's going on.
Butler now in the corner with St. John's putting the pressure on. And a bump coming out from Zombie, managing to steal the ball away from Arkamp there. All of the momentum lost, passing it to Webb. Webb gets it past Arkamp. Wow. Now all it's down to is Primal, and Primal manages to save it after we saw Butler get it past two of the defensive players from St. John's.
A little less complex than, say, some of the other multi-online battleground arenas, which are a little bit more complicated to understand.
Can you give us some examples of what the Big East will be playing?
I can. So the Big East is going to be playing on the Rocket League you just mentioned. They're going to be playing in a game called Overwatch, which is essentially a science fiction version of a first-person shooter game, but very nonviolent in that way. They're going to be playing Super Smash Brothers Ultimate, which is an old Nintendo game that follows a lot of what the Nintendo graphics has always looked like. Very silly and fun and very competitive. And then they'll be playing in, we're doing FIFA soccer tournament. So we're going to have, we essentially run 8 weeks in the fall, break for, semester break, come back with 8 weeks in the spring. We plan to add, we're working with 32 schools now and plan to double that in the spring. And then we have conference championships and we have a March Madness style bracket at the end. So it very much follows what a college basketball schedule might look like.
There are scholarships being handed out in esports, right?
Yeah, that's one of the great things that esports has done. And there's been it's a great time where the schools themselves are connecting that back to the academic world. So we think about scholarship for the students. We also think about our system creates a rev share for schools. Ultimately, we want the schools to be able to make money as they are with other sports. They can make money off that they can then use to reinvest back into their esports programs. So this is a long haul. This is about getting a system that has already worked to grow other sports into esport and then get these programs to continue to build and build over the next 5 years, 10 years, 20 years.
EGF showcases the league play with live events or streamed online from campus or from home. EGF means top-notch broadcast production to share the best with the world. It's time to unite where everyone is included. It's time for EGF. Join us.
Eric Johnson, the CEO of the Electronic Gaming Federation, is our guest here on Sports Jam. I've heard you say that, athletic directors don't, not everybody gets this. So I want Eric Johnson's pitch. Okay, we're all athletic directors for a various school right now, and we've heard about, the EGF, we've heard about esports, and we see that some top-notch schools are involved. We know that you're talking about it at UCLA. Give me your sales pitch.
Yeah, what we really do, and I've actually got on a plane and gone to a number of major universities, which I won't share, and you had the athletic departments meeting these their esport club version and the provost, and nobody has met or even talked about it. So sometimes the pitch is just getting that introduction amongst themselves. We really focus on the idea that this is an opportunity for students to compete, for students to earn scholarship for competing, for students to be able to make money for the schools. And I think once you build an alumni base, I believe firmly esport will be the third largest revenue driving sport on campus. It'll go football, basketball, esport. In this decade, that's going to happen. Because we've already seen on the professional side how fast that growth has been. It is undeniable that this audience is growing. It has already been there, but it's finally being recognized. So why not be ahead of that and create a connection and use a system you already have in place to help make that connection of the students with the campus and for their educational purposes?
Eric, does it also level the playing field a little bit more for, I'm not 7'2", I'm not 265 pounds and can run like the Dickens. Does it even the playing field on who can compete?
It does in some ways, and it creates some challenges in other ways, right? So what it does do is it does take some of that physicality that you mentioned, It does take gender out of the equation. You know, in my mind, we should be steaming towards not having a men's and women's esports program, but having an esports program that is diverse and inclusive of everybody. There's no reason that can't be the case. That's where we're heading. It does tie to access to technology, probably if there's a hindrance, right? If I grew up in a socioeconomic area where we didn't have as much school funding to be able to have as much access to computer technology in the school, or I happen to live in a home where we have really bad broadband service and my Wi-Fi stinks. We all have gone through that during the pandemic, but it limits your ability to be super special or access to LAN centers. So there are other things that make it that we need to continue to build as a, you know, as folks in this industry to make that access ubiquitous everywhere.
Is that your responsibility, or is that schools? Is that individuals themselves? I mean, you can't change some of the situations, but you can make it better.
Yes. Look, it's not our full responsibility, but as CEO of this company, I think it's our responsibility to do everything we can to do that. So we not only operate on the college side, but we also operate with high schools. So if we have the ability to take a high school, a college in Texas, and then take the high schools and all of their feeder programs and do events that connect them together, create a relationship between the high schools and the college, and then maybe those college centers become areas the high schoolers can go use, right? That maybe have better technology, faster connections. There's things that we can do. Ultimately, anybody who's in this space, who's looking at young adults in the esports space, should be thinking about what could they do to make this possible for everyone.
Who out there that we would know in the sports world has made the greatest transition from knowing about traditional sports to esports?
Oh my goodness. I do not have an answer for you on that. Unfortunately, I don't want to dodge it. I don't know that we know that yet, but hopefully there's more folks who will be doing that, because I think the fusing of the two together is the right path for the most sustainable growth.
I think I saw Hunter Pence, who just retired from Major League Baseball. I think I saw him on a video promoting esports.
Yeah, so Hunter Pence, he does a lot of his own live streaming on Twitch. He plays games. He played with us. We did a youth baseball organization called Perfect Game. We did, when they had to shut down the fields in the spring, we hosted an online tournament, and Hunter was not only an announcer, but he played in the tournaments. He was there gracious with all of his time. There's a number of athletes who are doing a great job. Gordon Hayward of the Celtics, is an avid gamer. He has actually been on record saying if schools had had as much esport in them as they do now when he went to college over a decade ago, he goes, I probably would have never made it to the NBA because I would have been too busy playing games and I would have taken a career that way. I would have become a professional gamer. I think he did all right, by the way. But he's another person who's an advocate, and he's thinking about post-career, how is he going to help grow that? There's a lot of athletes that are very interested in play. When they retire, that's going to be when you're going to answer your question.
Can you briefly describe Twitch, the platform?
Yes. So Twitch is like a live version of YouTube. It is a streaming platform where you can follow channels of the things that are of interest for you, or you have a search bar where you can put in, I'm very interested in, a Rocket League, or very interested in whatever. And then I can go there and I can watch those streams of those events. So it's just like, you know, a different version of television, but with total access to be able to watch lots of things live at the same time.
Let's play somebody who says gaming, it doesn't keep people in shape unless they're doing physical things within the game. In this world of obesity and kids needing to, what's your response to that, Eric?
I think it's something that needs to be watched and managed. I think it's very important. I think everything should be done in balance. There's times where gaming is not done in balance. And I think that that's unhealthy. You know, we've partnered with a number of groups. We partner with a group called Rage Against the Disorder. They are focused on mental health and wellness. And they're a nonprofit that we introduce to the schools. We find that to be very important. It's something to be managed. And nutrition and, just general health and activity, those are things that still need to be a part of people's lives.
We've had a full Sports Gen done on image and likeness and should athletes be paid and things like that. Image and likeness comes into play with esports as well.
It's one of the biggest reasons probably why a lot of athletic departments are not connected to their esports teams yet, because name, image, and likeness, if you're an esport player, you've been on a channel like Twitch already when you're in high school, and you've had people give you money, so you've already become a quote-unquote professional by NCAA standards and are no longer legally allowed to play for the institution. That's why esports has been separate. The NCAA is solving their name, image, likeness with traditional sports, potentially next year, potentially the next 5 years. I, for one, look forward to when that is all resolved in the best proper way, because I think athletes deserve more than they're getting now.
We're speaking with Eric Johnson, the CEO of the Electronic Gaming Federation, or EGF. What's been more impactful on the sports world and our whole vibe, Air Jordan or Fortnite?
Oh, man. Wow. I'm going to go old school, so I'm saying Air Jordan, but that's because I'm biased in that regard. And Fortnite certainly has done a number in this first stint. I'll tell you that. But let's see Fortnite give it for another decade or so, and then we'll put it in the conversation.
It has been such a craze. Can you just describe it briefly for our listeners?
Oh, for Fortnite?
Yeah.
Yeah. Fortnite is a multiplayer sensation that was nowhere on the map just a few years ago, that allows people to build and take over areas and compete. You can have up to 100 folks who are in one match at a given time, often. And it just becomes this real world. To give you a sense of how real world it is, on Super Bowl Saturday, the Super Bowl halftime show is one of the biggest musical acts of the year. So Fortnite on Super Bowl Saturday has the last couple of years hosted a concert in the Fortnite arena. So in your actual computer, where people were getting alerts that very famous bands or DJs were playing, and they were running to their computer or their console, and they were jumping into this world, and they were watching a live concert. And they probably got more people watching that Saturday concert than watched the Sunday Super Bowl halftime around the world.
It's mind-boggling.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the local schools that we know about in the Big East. We got Seton Hall, St. John's, and UConn. Tell us about how good are their, esports programs at those schools?
They're all, like I said, the Big East is on what we think is the leadership edge, and why it was so important for us to make a long-term deal with them as one of our first deals. So those programs are tremendous. Georgetown has a very tremendous program, Butler as well, DePaul. And not only do they have a great connection between university and the athletes and the teams, but the people who are running those programs are some of the brightest in the collegiate space. So often when we're talking to different areas of the country who are trying to get to this, we use a lot of their executives to say, hey, I'm going to connect you with, Lori or Eric, or with the commissioner, Chris at the Big East, who works with Val, has been a tremendous champion of ours. We get them to say, here's how we've solved it. We don't have to solve it. Let's give you an administrator who knows how to solve it.
Eric, you're a father of three, 22, 20, and two. So you're amazingly busy, but you've had the conversations, I'm sure, with your kids, and you will eventually with your two-year-old son. Mm-hmm. There's such a divide when it comes to kids and their grandparents. When they see them on these digital devices, I don't think the kids let them in. I think maybe if they shared a little bit more with their grandparents or their parents, or even their older siblings and cousins, I think they could enjoy it more with them. They seem to like, well, you don't know, I know, and I don't want to wait for you to catch up. What advice would you have for not only the kids, but also the parents and grandparents?
You know, it's great. And I actually have some real world experience with this, with my daughter in particular, who was so into gaming and the games that I had not at the time played. So I didn't understand. League of Legends is one of the most famous games, and it's an incredible game. And it's the equivalent of the NFL of esports in some ways. But I didn't understand it at first. And so I got that same exact thing. And this was what her passion and love and idea was. And what it took for me was commitment for me to make the investment to understand, to bridge that gap, not to just have animosity towards her for not letting me in. So I studied, I watched videos, I played it. I got to where I understood how to make that. And our relationship has never been better because now we can converse in so many different ways. And I think that's, I don't know, that's my philosophy. My older son is incredibly creative and dynamic. He is more open and emotional on text than he is in person. So I adapted to his style so that we could have those meaningful interactions and then bring that out in the voice after it's already been discussed.
I think Eric Johnson needs to write a book, right? You need to help us with that, with those relationships, because that is something that I think is very important, what you are doing, and thus being a great dad. I'll give you an opportunity to either talk a little bit more about One Worldwide or the fact that you're a member and faculty director of UCLA's Anderson Media Entertainment and Sports Center.
Yeah, sure. On the One Worldwide front, running my own company where we're working with, like I said, what I think are emerging and leading edge, different types of companies that are going to take over verticals within the sports space. And I'm working with a company, CoStar, out of Australia, who does like a Zoom, but a production version, does these great ways to make athletes and musicians available to all of us as fans in a one-to-one basis or in a group setting, virtually. At UCLA, I've been a board member of their Media, Entertainment, and Sports Center for about 5 years, faculty director. I'm currently teaching a class, as an example, on the impact of COVID on the sports and entertainment world. And it's a fascinating course to teach because I have to tell the students, I don't know what's going to happen in 3 weeks from now. So when we get there, we'll find out.
Fabulous class and so timely. And I'm sure the students, how many students do you have in that class, by the way?
35 in this class. I taught it in the spring as well, and we had about 80. And that really was, there's no textbook.
That's incredible. Just two more questions for you, Eric. I don't want to keep you too long. I know you got things to do. For sure, but when it comes to your two-year-old son, when he's ready for college, what's the e-sports environment climate going to be like? I mean, is he going to be going into, of course, there? I have a chance to get a scholarship and going to UCLA, and it's going to be because I know how to play these games.
I think it will be fully established by then. I think you will have, you know, what drives football and basketball in college is not the students who are going there. It is the alums who have a passion for it. By the time Jacob, my son, is in his 20s and in college, there'll be 20 years of alums in esports connected to their schools, and it's all going to look very different.
I lied. I have two more left for you. You and your wife, the whole back and forth thing with COVID impacting your lives and having two places to go, New York and LA, how difficult has that been?
It's been very difficult. And it's been difficult because her mom lives abroad outside of the U.S. and has not been able to obviously get on a plane. And certainly with COVID, the restrictions of in and out of country flight has been tough. So she's missing her grandchild, quite frankly. We happen to be in Los Angeles. We chose the warmer side to stay during COVID, and we were fairly near the beach, so we're not suffering, I'll just say that. But I do miss a lot of folks back in New York, and looking forward to getting back as soon as it's safe to do so.
We go into the future, and everything has shut down. There's no more power, but there's a little juice left in the computer or on an iPhone, iPad, or any kind of device, and you have one more opportunity with Ashley, your daughter, to play one game, and then it will be over. What are you playing, and why?
That's great. These are wonderful questions, by the way. I'm really enjoying this. I would play with my daughter, I would play a game called Mario Karts. And there's a character in Mario Karts named Little Toad, and he's shaped like a little mushroom. And that was something that was very special between us. And with my older son, I would play Pokemon Go because they're both into Pokemon in an amazing way, or were when they were younger. And so those are things that will just bring back to me lots of memories.
Fun times, I'm sure. And to think about the fact that you're predicting in this decade that esports is going to be the number three revenue generating sport on campus is just, to me, I can't even put my mind about it, but you can. And so you're going to lead us through this. And I am so glad that you've spent some time here on Sports Jam.
Thank you so much for having me. And I really appreciate not only the time and getting to hear your questions and getting to know you a little bit too, but I appreciate you talking about this cause with your listenership, because I think it is a lot more approachable than maybe it's thought of by people who don't game.
Thanks again, Eric. Sports Jam is a WBGO News production. You can check out all the podcasts by going to WBGO.org/Sports Jam or find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on the NPR list of podcasts or on iTunes. Until our next Sports Jam session, I hope to see you at the game.